Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, November 7th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, P&Z Commissioners Support Zoo Midland, the Preserve, by Mella McEwen, Business Editor. The transformation of the former Nueva Vista Golf Course into Zoo Midland and the Preserve received support at Monday's Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. Commissioners approved Bootlake Ranch Properties' request for a zone change from AE, Agricultural Estate, to Local Retail District on an 80.96-acre site. Commissioners also approved a special use designation without term for a wildlife rehabilitation center on a 51.97-acre tract at the site. Commissioners praised the developers for their work with the surrounding community to hear and address concerns. With flooding a top concern, developers told the commissioners they are conducting a full-range analysis of all the previous flooding studies, with appropriate plans for drainage. They told commissioners they see the redevelopment as an opportunity to rectify previous issues. Charles Harrington told commissioners the public had told him their top concerns about a zoo were noise, which would be little more than a normal conversation, and smell. He said the zoo plans to contain solid animal waste, take it off-site, and have it converted into compost. Since it will be a newly built zoo, it will also contain state-of-the-art security and monitoring technology. He added that the zoo plans to primarily offer long-term housing to wild animals deemed unreleasable by the state of Texas. Since it will take about 3 years for construction, Harrington added that zookeepers intend to conduct education programs at local schools and organizations to maintain awareness of the plans. Preserve developers said their requirements for the site will be for restaurants, high-quality retail stores, and offices. After much discussion, commissioners approved by a 4-2 vote Scott Dufford's request for a specific use designation with term for the sale of alcoholic beverages for consumption at a recreation center for Murray's Center Court Grill at Bush Tennis Center, 5700 Briarwood Avenue. Commissioners raised concerns about the proximity to any schools built near the center, as well as the impact of alcohol sales at a site that hosts University Interscholastic League events. Commissioners also approved a request by Jennifer Chacon for a specific use designation with term for the sale of alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant for Service Area 19 at Mockingbird Lane and North Big Spring. It will share a building with Jack's Convenience Store. Kendall Howard also received a specific use designation with term for the sale of alcoholic beverage for on-premises consumption in a restaurant for the Palms Cuban Cochina, which is going in the former Garlic Press location at 2200 West Wadley Avenue. Teresa Lane received her specific use designation with term for the sale of alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant for the Lounge, which is under construction at 5606 Starboard Drive, and looking to open in December. This article is entitled, A Record Number of Supertankers is Headed to Collect American Oil, by Bill Lehane, Bloomberg. A record number of supertankers is steaming toward the U.S. to load oil, as ship owners look to capitalize on an increase in the nation's crude exports. 48 vessels are bound for the country in the coming 3 months, according to data gathered Friday by Bloomberg. That's the most in at least 6 years. The flow of vessels illustrates the changing energy landscape as the U.S. pumps more crude than ever before, and the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies seek to prop up the market with supply curbs. U.S. crude exports have surged this year, government data show. U.S. producers are increasingly sending low-sulfur, light-sweet oil overseas, while many domestic refiners prefer to fill their slates with heavier grades that yield more diesel-type fuels. The nation lifted its decades-old restrictions on crude exports in 2015. U.S. slate optimization is forcing further volumes of U.S. light sweets to the waterborne market, said Richard Price, an oil markets analyst at Energy Aspects Limited. Shipments from the U.S. Gulf Coast, the main exporting region, are expected to rise by 100,000 barrels a day year-on-year next month, to 4.1 million barrels a day, according to the researcher. Meanwhile, the OPEC Plus curbs are prompting tankers to leave the Middle East in search of better prospects in the Atlantic for the winter season, he added. The glut of vessels racing to the U.S. Gulf even includes ships heading to the region on a speculative basis, without any cargo booking. An industry practice known as ballasting, according to E.A. Gibson, a London-based shipbroker. Stronger demand for winter could mean higher earnings for those tankers when they reach the U.S., according to Svetlana Lobasiova, a principal analyst at the firm. This article is entitled Diamondback Energy to Donate $500,000 to Mission Agape by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Diamondback Energy will donate $500,000 to Mission Agape for the construction of a new distribution center, the Rick Backus Memorial Building. This new distribution center will expand storage capacity and increase the ability to provide services, strengthening Mission Agape's impact within the greater Permian Basin community, according to a press release. Mission Agape is a nonprofit organization that supports underprivileged communities who battle food insecurity by providing food to students and families across West Texas, according to the press release. Through its various programs, Mission Agape provides food boxes every week for 600 families in 7 rural counties across the Permian Basin, supplies 1,350 students with food bags for the weekends, and 1,200 food bags to teen students throughout the year. It is an honor and a privilege to have a community partner like Diamondback, who supports and believes in our mission to reduce food insecurity in the Permian Basin. We are extremely grateful for and humbled by their willingness to generously support Mission Agape's current capital campaign, said Kelly Brooks, president of the board of directors, in the press release. Across all programs, Mission Agape feeds 5,000 children and adults every month in 10 Permian Basin counties. Danny Wesson, Diamondback Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, stated, "We are honored to be able to support Mission Agape in the outstanding work they do for our underprivileged communities. We know that the construction of this new building will have a positive impact on our community for years to come." Stacy Backus, Mission Agape founder and executive director, added, "We are grateful Diamondback chose Mission Agape to bless with an incredible and significant donation. This generous donation brings us even closer to reaching our $3.4 million goal. Thank you, Diamondback, for supporting our critical mission to fight food insecurity in the Permian Basin." This article is entitled DoubleTree by Hilton Makes Case for $15 Million from MDC by Mella McEwen, business editor. Shafiq Tehani, managing partner of the DoubleTree by Hilton Midland Plaza, appeared before members of the Midland Development Corporation board to make his case for a $15 million investment from the MDC in renovations to the downtown hotel. Tehani noted that since his company acquired the property in 2004, it has made more than $20 million in renovations, capital expenditures, and infrastructure investment. He told board members several times the reason he is asking for MDC assistance is we need help because of COVID. He said when the pandemic hit in 2020, the hotel lost 60 to 70% of its revenue stream and almost lost the business. The downturn required him to lay off 100 people at the hotel, he said. We were planning to do those renovations in 2020. But then COVID hit, he told board members. That cost the hotel 60 to 70% of its revenue stream, he said, and this year is finally beginning to see some healthy business. Hilton requires upgrades in order for the hotel to retain its brand, he said. Approximately $8.25 million would fund the hotel's 261 guest rooms, including converting shower tub units to shower-only units and installing the latest in wireless and hardwired technology to allow guests to live stream. Approximately $4.5 million would renovate the lobby into an open concept lobby, convert its existing Starbucks into a full Starbucks kiosk, and renovations to the rooftop bar that would allow its use 365 days a year, and to the pool deck. That will add to efforts to offer dining, retail, and entertainment downtown, he said. Elevators, the boiler system, and all mechanics would also be replaced or updated. Should the MDC act to grant the request, he said, the funds would be dispersed through the MDC and over an approximate two-year time frame. Tehani estimated that renovations would create 25 additional jobs with an estimated 754,000 in payroll and contribute to new business by offering products in conjunction with Visit Midland and the Bush Convention Center. It would also increase city occupancy taxes by 31.53% or $265,765 by the third year, and increase Midland County occupancy taxes by 31.89% or $38,410 in the same period. As you can see, we've paid a lot in property taxes, he said, pointing to the $5.6 million in property taxes, $3 million in sales and mixed beverage taxes since 2004. The hotel has also paid $8 million in state occupancy taxes, $9.4 million in city occupancy taxes, and $1.2 million in county occupancy taxes in that time. If Midlanders want a downtown hotel as nice as the Odessa Marriott, this is what it will take, Tehani told the board. I need this money to bring back a product people can be proud of, Tehani concluded. Should the MDC board deny the request, he said renovations will still take place, but on a much smaller scale. MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris said it would be up to the board members to decide when and if to act on the request. This article is entitled DPS, Collision Results in Death of Midlander, 44 Cattle, by the Midland Reporter Telegram. A 28-year-old Midland man died Friday morning in a three-vehicle accident east of Garden City inside Glasscock County, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. Edward Scott Abendroth was driving a 2019 Peterbilt truck with trailer eastbound of State Highway 158 when he failed to control his speed and struck the trailer of a 1998 Volvo truck from the rear, according to DPS. Abendroth was pronounced deceased at the scene, according to DPS. A third vehicle, a 2014 Peterbilt truck with trailer, was traveling westbound on State 158 and was struck by debris from the collision of the other two vehicles, according to DPS. The collision with the debris caused the driver to lose control of the vehicle and the towed trailer, causing both to side skid and roll over, according to DPS. The trailer of the 2014 Peterbilt truck was a cattle hauler, loaded with approximately 120 cattle, and 44 were deceased on the scene, DPS reported. The accident took place at 8:07 a.m., 10 miles west of Garden City. This article is entitled Election Day Info in Midland County by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Election Day Information. Time and day, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday. Voting Centers. Annex Courtroom, 2110 North A Street. Beale Park Ranch House, 5200 West Wall Street. Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main Street. Centennial Library, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Cogdill Learning Center, 201 West Florida Avenue. Cotton Flat Baptist Church, 6409 South Highway 349. Downtown Library, 301 West Missouri Avenue. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3813 North Midland Drive. Fellowship Community Church, 5206 North Midland Drive. Golf Course Road Church of Christ, 3500 West Golf Course Road. Greater Ideal Life Center, 301 South Tyler Street. Greenwood Baptist Church, 10908 FM 307. Holy Cross Lutheran Church, 5100 North Garfield Street. Horseshoe Education Building, 2514 Arena Trail. Mid-Cities Community Church, 8700 State Highway 191. Midland Chin Emmanuel Church, 2705 West Michigan. MLK Junior Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. Northeast Volunteer Fire Department, 5310 East County Road 60. Odessa Country Club, No. 1 Fairway Drive. Presence Church, 901 Midland Drive. Stonegate Fellowship Church, 6000 West Wadley Avenue. The Orchard Church, 6112 State Highway 349. Village at Manor Park, Margaret Cowden Clubhouse, 5212 Sinclair Avenue. What's on the ballot? 14 state propositions. Midland ISD Special Election District 7, Brian Murray, Joshua Gwynn. Note, eligible precincts, 110 split, 401, 404, 407, 408 split, 409, and 411. Midland ISD Proposition A, the issuance of $1.415 billion school funding bonds for the design, construction, acquisition, rehabilitation, renovation, expansion, improvement, and equipment of school buildings in the district, including 1. Two new high schools, 2. Middle school expansion, renovation, and improvement, 3. District-wide safety and security, 4. A new elementary school, and 5. Rehabilitation and improvement of existing facilities, and the level and imposition of taxes sufficient to pay the principal of and interest on the bonds and the costs of any credit agreements, This is a property tax increase. Note, eligible precincts. All Midland County precincts except 202 and 202A. Greenwood ISD Proposition A. The issuance of a $198.77 million of bonds by the Greenwood Independent School District for the construction, renovation, acquisition, and equipment of school facilities in the district, including, but not limited to, improvements to enhance safety and security, including the acquisition of land, therefore, and the levy of taxes sufficient to pay the principal and interest on the bonds. This is a property tax increase. Greenwood ISD Proposition B. The issuance of $87 million of bonds by the Greenwood Independent School District for the construction, renovation, acquisition, and equipment of a student special events center and a student multipurpose center, including the acquisition of land therefor and the levy of taxes sufficient to pay the principal and interest on the bonds. This is a property tax increase. Note, eligible precincts 202 and 202A. Early voting ballots cast October 23rd, 933, October 24th, 1288, October 25th, 1218, October 26th, 1102, October 27th, 1626, October 28th, 1074, October 29th, 350, October 30th, 1094, October 31st, 1111, November 1st, 1237, Thursday, 1480, Friday, 2890. Mailed ballots received, 300. Total, 15,714. This is a letter to the editor. I ran into a retired MISD principal who grew up in Midland and dedicated decades to serving children in MISD this past weekend. While Angie Aaron and I were inside Lowe's, we both reached the same conclusion as we were standing in that hardware store. Many couples and marriages in that store are not perfect, struggling or possibly failing. But that did not stop them from improving, updating, or expanding their home for their children. It was a sober reminder of why I continued to be supportive of this school bond. Just like any marriage, both parties should be held accountable. But they both need support for the duration of that marriage. The facilities and the relationship between MISD and the community need tremendous investment. The passage of this bond is the easy part, but it's the relationship building between MISD and the community that's going to take the most labor, so our children benefit. We can do both. We can improve the learning conditions of our children and the working conditions of our teachers by passing this bond. We can also invest in building a strong relationship between the district and the community. It's up to us. Signed, Reagan Hinojos. This article is entitled, Midland College Hosts Roundtable on New Outcome-Based Funding Model, by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Governor Greg Abbott signed House Bill 8 into law on June 9th. The bill codifies an innovative new model to fund community colleges in Texas. On Friday, Midland College President Damon Kennedy, Texas higher education officials, and local business people held a roundtable to discuss what the new outcome-based funding model means for Midland College and Texas community colleges. On its website, the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board laid out the new piece of legislation. With the passage of House Bill 8, Texas will reform its community college finance system to align policy and funding incentives with the rapidly changing needs of the workforce. It also puts dual credit students in high schools on pathways toward meaningful credentials and expands opportunities for adult learners. The passage of HB 8 and the allocation of $683 million in the state budget positions Texas as a national leader in tying funding for community colleges to measurable student-focused outcomes. These include the number of credentials of value awarded, including badges, certificates, and degrees that position graduates for well-paying jobs. Credentials of value awarded in high-demand fields, where employers are looking for skilled employees. Successful student transfers from community colleges to four-year universities. Completion of a sequence of dual credit courses, which are offered to high school students and can set them on early pathways to success, the website states. Kennedy calls the HB 8 transformational and brings Texas Community College into the 21st century as it relates to statewide community college funding. Ray Martinez III, president and CEO of the Texas Association of Community Colleges, discussed why now is the right time to implement this bill into the state's community college system. According to Martinez, the Texas economy has created a lot of momentum. Texas is the number one state in the country for energy production and job creation. It's also the fastest growing state in the U.S., with a total population of more than 30 million, the second state in the country to reach 30 plus million residents. Although the previous community college funding model based on contact hours and enrollment had been in place for around 50 years, this new legislation will allow Texas and areas like Midland to capitalize on the state's economic momentum. We need to make sure that the skill sets that are needed by our local, regional, statewide employers and industry align to the skill set that we're offering our students when they enroll in our community college, Martinez said. Martinez referenced a report from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas that showed Texas as seeing 4 million new jobs between now and 2035. Though some of these jobs will require a bachelor's degree or better to attain, the jobs in sectors that will see the most growth, manufacturing, transportation, construction, information technology, and healthcare, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, will only require a high school diploma or associate's degree. That is the sweet spot of our 50 community colleges across the state, Martinez said. Local business people from prominent local companies and corporations gathered in the Carrasco Room to discuss the local ramifications of the legislation's passage. Chief Operating Officer of the Midland Chamber of Commerce, Evan Thomas, asked Martinez and the Commissioner of the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, Harrison Keller, how local businesses can help community college outcomes and secure funding under the new funding model. Martinez said collaboration between community college and local business and industry is more crucial than ever, and is incentivized under House Bill 8 that allows short-term credentials awarded to professionals continuing their education as a fundable outcome. These short-term certificates and credentials for professionals were not a fundable outcome under the contact hour and enrollment-based funding model of the past. Jeff Beard, VP of Business Development at Crown Quest Operating, asked the officials how a performance-based funding model would help address job shortages in the local community. Keller said the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board needs to reflect workforce training, micro-credentials, knowledge, and competencies as fundable, performance-based outcomes. Andrew Hyatt, operations account manager at Helmerich & Payne, asked how the new funding model will handle a situation where a student leaves community college after attending a few classes to find a well-paying job. Keller called that a complex situation, as it relates to an outcome that may appear as a dropout at face value, but ends in a positive outcome for a student, like securing a job. Martinez said the Texas Association of Community Colleges wants to create resources and an environment where students can remain flexible between professional and educational pathways. This article is entitled, Saudi, Russia Stick to Planned Oil Cuts Amid Mideast Tension, by Grant Smith and Salma El Wardani, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia and Russia reaffirmed that they will stick with oil supply curbs of more than 1 million barrels a day until the end of the year, even as turmoil in the Middle East roils global markets. The leaders of the OPEC Plus coalition announced the plans in separate official statements on Sunday. Riyadh has slashed daily crude production by 1 million barrels, and Moscow is curbing exports by 300,000 barrels, on top of earlier cuts made with fellow OPEC Plus nations. Saudi Arabia will review its production volumes next month and consider extending the cut, deepening the cut, or increasing production, according to a statement on the Saudi press agency. Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak echoed the Saudi comments on future production policy in a separate statement. Oil prices have fluctuated in recent weeks on concern that the conflict between Israel and Hamas could escalate into a wider regional conflagration involving major crude producer Iran. Brent futures closed below $85 a barrel in London on Friday. A broader conflict could prompt the Saudis and Russia to revise their planned cuts, according to the International Energy Agency, which has warned of the risks that high fuel prices pose for inflation and the global economy. Yet, for the time being, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners seem intent on keeping supplies on a tight leash. The Saudis may need oil prices as high as $100, according to Bloomberg Economics, to fund expensive projects such as the futuristic city known as NEOM, and the purchase of high-profile footballers and golfers for domestic sporting franchises. President Vladimir Putin, meanwhile, needs petroleum revenues to finance his war against Ukraine. Last month, Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman said at the Future Investment Initiative Conference in Riyadh that the kingdom's oil market strategy is working. Saudi Arabia may also be motivated to stay the course by signs that physical oil markets are weakening. Fuel-making profits are sliding, and high freight costs are making it harder to ship crude across different regions. Steep inventory declines widely anticipated by the industry haven't yet materialized, Goldman Sachs Group Inc. has observed. The Saudis may be forced to extend their 1 million barrel a day unilateral cut into 2024, as market conditions continue to falter, according to consultant Eurasia Group. A new supply surplus will emerge early next year, as demand growth slows sharply, the IEA predicts. The full 23-nation OPEC Plus coalition will hold a ministerial meeting on November 26th to review policy for 2024. This article is entitled, Will Younger Voters Show Up for MISD's Bond Election? By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Energize Midland Schools and its supporters have attempted to connect with younger voters during the campaign to pass a $1.415 billion Midland ISD bond. During early voting last week, the Political Action Committee provided a breakdown of the number of early voters by age and showed 65 plus with 35.3% of the vote. That was the largest percentage for any group. The second largest percentage was 21.6% by those 35 to 44. The third largest was 2013, was 17.9% by those 55 to 64. The only other age range above 10% was 13.5% by those 45 to 54. As we close out early voting, take a look at our voting data by age group, an Energized Midland social media post read. Parents, future parents, please go vote. Note, voting will take place from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday at voting centers across the county. What will be turnout on Tuesday? If history is any indication, a majority of voters have already cast a ballot inside Midland County. During November elections in non-presidential elections, going back to 2018, around two-thirds of the voter turnout happened during early voting. It is worth noting that the election with the highest election day turnout, percentage-wise, was the 2019 bond/city elections. During that election, 59.8% of the voters voted during the early voting period. Early voting ends on a high note. When it comes to turnout, early voting ended with a bang. The Midland County Elections Office reported the two largest single-day turnouts happened on the last 2 days of early voting, with 1,480 ballots cast on Thursday and 2,890 on Friday. That lifted the total number of early votes in person and by mail to 15,714. The Reporter-Telegram showed early voting ballots in person and by mail totaled 15,266 in 2019. MISD's tax election record since 1990. Midland ISD is batting less than 500 on elections going back to 1990. The Midland County Elections Office and Reporter-Telegram archives show Midland voters have passed 5 propositions and voted down 9 others. Whether it is bond-related or the tax ratification election in 2016. Since 2003, voters have approved 4 of 7 propositions, including the most expensive bond ever passed inside Midland County, $163 million in 2012. However, Midland ISD has lost its last 2 tax elections. Midland voters have voted down 4 propositions that have included building a new Midland High School in 1996, 2000, 2002, and 2019, since 1990. Election includes District 7 race. There is also a race for the District 7 seat on the Midland ISD School Board. Josh Gwynn and Brian Murray are battling for the seat Murray once held. District 7 includes the following areas: Greentree, Briarwood, Saddle Club Ranch Estates, Great House, a section bordered by Garfield Street on the east, Midland Drive on the west, Bluebird Avenue on the north, and Loop 250 on the south, and another section bordered by Loop 250 and Briarwood to the north, Wadley Avenue to the south, Holiday Hill and Loop 250 to the west, and Midkiff Road to the east. Greenwood ISD bond. Eligible voters in Greenwood will vote on a $140 million school district bond expected to help with current and future growth. The bond includes a new intermediate school for 3rd through 5th graders, $62.6 million, increased capacity, modernized laboratories, and new gym for the high school, $45.4 million, and increased capacity and renovate elementary school for pre-K through second grade, $16.8 million. This article is entitled Midland ISD Election Outcomes Since 1990 by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. MISD Elections Since 1990. 1990, MISD, $24.49 million for construction and renovation of school facilities and equipment. 4, 3,329 against 4,647. 1996, MISD, a $110 million bond for a new Midland High School and improvements to elementary and secondary schools. 4, 6,291 against 7,974. 1997, MISD, a $39.5 million school bond for the renovation of 14 elementary schools. 4, 4,409 against 3,167. 2000, MISD, a $72.2 million bond for a new Midland High School and renovations to Lee High School. 4, 6,219 against 14,263. 2002, MISD, $91 million to $167 million. Proposition 1, a $90.95 million bond to build a new San Jacinto Junior High and Southside Elementary and make improvements at Midland High School and Lee. 4, 8,300 against 9,369. Proposition 2, a $30.56 million bond for athletic and performing arts facility improvements. 4, 7,226 against 10,248. Proposition 3, a $45.64 million bond for a new Midland High School and improvements to Lee. 4, 7,438 against 10,065. 2003, MISD Proposition 1, a $67,087,500 bond to repair secondary schools. 4, 9,380 against 5,397. Proposition 2, a $9 million bond for a Southside Elementary School. 4, 7,112 against 7,901. 2007, MISD, Proposition 1, a $30 million bond for the construction, acquisition, and equipment of elementary school buildings. 4, 3,896 against 2,556. Proposition 2, a $7.16 million bond for the construction, acquisition, and equipment of school buildings for athletics and physical education programs. 4, 3,567 against 2,887. 2012, MISD, $163 million bond for new elementary schools and renovations and upgrades to existing elementary facilities. 4, 23,878 against 14,747. 2016, MISD, tax ratification election. 4, 2,469 against 4,209. 2019, MISD, Proposition A, $569 million school bond. 4, 11,803 against 11,828. Sources for this article, Midland County Elections Office, Reporter Telegram Archives. This is the Life Tributes column. Betty Jean Budge Wiggum, January 6, 1928, to October 21, 2023. Betty Jean Budge Wiggum entered her heavenly home on October 21, 2023, at the age of 95. Betty was born on January 6, 1928, in Somerset, Texas, to Ella Groves Budge and David Arthur Budge. She graduated from Odessa High School, and Betty attended the University of Texas, where she met the love of her life, Carl Wiggum, who was a student at Texas A&M. After Carl returned from the war, they married in 1947 and started their family. She is preceded in death by her husband of 61 years, her parents, her brother Arthur Neil Budge, her son David Carl Wiggum, and her daughter-in-law Linda Johnson Wiggum. She is lovingly remembered by her daughter Sherry Hobbs and Ben of Midland, daughter Terry Rogers and husband Buck of Midland, son Chris Wiggum and wife Deanne of Midland, daughter-in-law Cherry Wiggum of Midland, 12 grandchildren and numerous great-grandchildren. A viewing will be held from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday, November 10th at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 11th at First Baptist Church Chapel in Midland. The burial will take place at 1 p.m. on Saturday, November 11th at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Navajo Mission Ministry. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Dylan Zubia. Dylan Zubia, 17, of Odessa, passed from this life in Penwell on October 28th. A viewing will be held today, November 7th, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral will be held on Wednesday, November 8th at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home, with burial immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, November 7th. Holy Cross student advances to all region and all state choir competition. Raul Garcia, a senior at Holy Cross Catholic High School, continues to advance not only in academics, but in fine arts as well. The Texas Private School Music Educators Association auditions took place on October 27th, resulting in Garcia advancing to all region and all state choir. I'm very proud of Raul. With all his hard work and making time outside of school to learn his pieces, congratulations to Raul for this accomplishment. He represents Holy Cross so well, Carla Hernandez, Holy Cross music teacher, said in a news release. It is a three-part process to audition for the competition. The student first selects their vocal part. Then they learn the same song and audition cuts as everyone else competing within 2 months. Finally, the student will submit a recording of their piece to be judged. This is a blind competition, and the judges do not see the student, but can only hear the recording. Raul continues to amaze us with his amazing voice. He is a humble young man who has been blessed with an amazing talent. We are so proud of him, Carolyn Gonzalez, head of school, said in the release. Congratulations to Raul on a job well done. Garcia competed in the Base 1 category. The region reaches from El Paso to Amarillo to Fort Worth. Out of the region, there are only 35 Base 1 vocalists chosen for the all-region choir. Those top 16 go on to compete for the all-state choir with two other regions. Garcia is one of those 35 vocalists who will be singing with the all-region choir in January. He placed 15th and will be advancing to compete for a spot in the all-state choir held November 6th. MOW Red Cross partnering to install fire alarms. The American Red Cross serving the Permian Basin and Meals on Wheels of Odessa are partnering to sound the alarm and save a life. The two organizations are sharing resources and will install over 350 new smoke alarms in 117 homes from 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. November 18th at Meals on Wheels of Odessa, 1314 East 5th Street. Most people know Meals on Wheels for the noontime meal that is delivered weekdays to homebound seniors and disabled residents of Odessa and Ector County. Craig Stoker, Executive Director of Meals on Wheels of Odessa, said in a news release, "In addition to the meals we provide, one of our main priorities is to keep our clients living independently and safely as long as they are able. To do this, we are leveraging partnerships with other local agencies to provide more services to our older, adult, and disabled clients. Partnerships like this one with the American Red Cross are only possible with the help of dedicated community volunteers. We are seeking 50 volunteers for this project. If you can help, they need all the help they can get," the release said. Tyson recalls 30,000 pounds of chicken nuggets after consumers report finding metal pieces. Tyson Foods is recalling nearly 30,000 pounds of breaded chicken Fun Nuggets after consumers complained of finding metal pieces in the dinosaur-shaped patties. The nuggets, sold in 29-ounce bags, were produced on September 5th by the Berryville, Arkansas company. Tyson informed the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service and said it recalled the nuggets voluntarily out of an abundance of caution. USDA said that there had only been one report of a minor oral injury associated with consumption of this product. The nuggets subject to the recall carry the number P7211 on the back of the package. They were shipped to distributors in Alabama, California, Illinois, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, and Wisconsin to be passed on to retailers. The USDA urges consumers with the nuggets in their freezers to throw them out or return them to the place of purchase. The United Family releases statement concerning recall of Tyson brand Fun Nuggets. The United Family has released a statement concerning the recent recall of a Tyson brand product. United Supermarkets, Albertsons, Amigos, and Market Street in Texas and New Mexico are not affected by Tyson brand voluntary recall involving fully cooked Fun Nuggets, item number 10000048153, expiration date September 4th, 2023. This product is being recalled by Tyson brand due to possible small, pliable metal pieces. Tyson has confirmed that the United Family Division was not affected by this recall, as their records indicate that we did not receive any of the affected product. Salvation Army Red Kettles provide love beyond Christmas. The Salvation Army's annual Red Kettle campaign will soon be back in Odessa, ushering in the festive spirit of Christmas. The Red Kettle campaign is Salvation Army's primary fundraising initiative, providing life-changing programs and services throughout the year, including food assistance programs, shelter for people experiencing homelessness, emergency financial assistance, youth programs, and disaster response. From its humble origins in 1891, when a Salvation Army captain used a crab pot to collect funds in San Francisco, the Red Kettle campaign has grown to become one of the most recognized charitable initiatives worldwide, Captain Justin Vincent of the Salvation Army in Odessa said in a news release. The funds raised in the Red Kettle will serve as a lifeline in our community, offering essential assistance, including nourishment, shelter, and vital social services to people during their greatest need. Red Kettles will be stationed outside area stores and local businesses, Monday through Saturday, from the beginning of November to Christmas Eve. Last year, the Salvation Army raised $50,000 and is hoping to reach at least that amount again this season to support our community. We are grateful for the spirit of giving in our community and for the unwavering support we receive from our generous donors and corporate partners, Vincent added in the release. Together, we can ignite hope and support people in our community who are in the most need. The Salvation Army is also looking for volunteers to ring the bells at the Red Kettle. Sign up by visiting registertoring.com and following the prompts to call 432-332-0738 for more information. Visit SalvationArmyOdessa.org or call 432-332-0738 or visit 810 East 11th Street. To donate or learn more about how you can support the Salvation Army this Christmas. First Annual Festival of Trees. This weekend, the Permian Basin Adult Protective Services, APS, Advisory Board will be hosting the First Annual Festival of Trees. This event will help raise funds to provide much-needed services and resources for elderly and or disabled adults who are affected by abuse, neglect, and or financial exploitation. This brand new event will be family-friendly and will kick off the holiday season. We believe that this will become an annual family tradition in the Permian Basin, a press release said. This event will take place on November 10th and 11th at the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center. It all started with a special sneak peek adult-only ticketed event on Friday, November 10th. There will be heavy hors d'oeuvres, drinks, dancing, and entertainment, and a first look at all of the more than 35 beautifully decorated trees that will be raffled off at the end of the event on Saturday, November 11th. Raffle tickets are $1. Saturday will be filled with family-friendly entertainment, including letters to Santa, Santa story time, a senior fashion show, and more. Entry tickets will be $5 at the door. Seniors and veterans are free, and raffle tickets are $1. Buy as many raffle tickets as you want and put them in the bucket of your favorite tree, and you could be bringing home a fully decorated and beautiful tree. APS Facts and Figures. APS is a division of the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, DFPS. Its mission is to protect people who are 65 or older or who have disabilities from abuse, neglect, and exploitation by investigating and providing or arranging for services to alleviate or prevent further maltreatment. Texas has more than 5 million residents who are 65 or older, or who are younger adults, 18 to 64, and have a disability. APS investigated 12,688 allegations of abuse, neglect, financial exploitation in Texas in 2022. Of those, 207 were in the Permian Basin.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.